love what you do, others can feel your energy and receive it. In this episode of Why Not You, I had the honor to speak with Jennifer Griggs, who is an English teacher, basketball coach, and debate coach at Yucaipa High School. Join me as she shares her love and passion for teaching and coaching. This is Why Not You. All right. Here we are again. Another episode of Why Not You, and I am joined by Jennifer Griggs down in SoCal. As you can tell, she's definitely a teacher. Look at that background. Thanks, Jennifer, for being on.
Thank you so much, man. I am honored to be here and just get to share in this experience of Why Not You.
Thank you.
You know you're at a school campus too, because we have our amazing janitors going around helping us with our trash cans. So that's what that rolling noise is.
Oh, God. Hey, that's nothing. But before you even get it started, we got to start off with the quote. And I know you're a teacher, educator, you're out there serving, coaching, you're doing all kind of stuff. So I thought this quote right here was fitting for the moment. A good coach can change a game. A great coach can change a life. By John Wooden.
One and only, the true coach right there.
I know, right? True, man, we go back for, I mean, how many years ago was it that we met? I mean, at Fuller.
It's got to be probably at least 8 years.
Yeah.
At least 8 years when we were in CHAPS class together trying to figure out what this whole thing meant, man.
That was a great class, and it brought so much exposure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, especially working with youth.
Yes, and learning from really one of the game changers in youth ministry, right? To help us recognize that youth ministry leans into who these students are instead of who we expect them to be.
Yeah.
Just rocked my whole world. Like, CHAP literally rocked my world in every possible way and made me reassess everything I believed in life. So I guess it was a successful class, because I walked out of there going, man, I was missing the mark. And now I've got a lot of work to do to get there.
I know, huh? I think we both do. Thing about it is that we've been able to identify. So, you know, once you identify what it is that you need to do, you just start moving in that direction and making things happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. We got to start somewhere. We got to get the direction. And every day we take one small step. Eventually that small step's not going to be so small anymore.
Right. So, you know, while we were at Fuller though, was teaching, was that something that you thought about doing? Did you think that's the path that you were going to go down?
Not at all. When I was at Fuller, I was actually already a youth pastor. And so I was, you know, just trying to get the master's degree to back up the position and all of that, because being a female pastor in the area that I live in was not something that had really been done before. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to kind of be proactive and take away any excuse for somebody to discredit what I had to offer the ministry and have the degrees already lined up. And then I'll be completely honest. I have nothing but respect for our church leaders and our pastors. But for me personally, my desire to serve my students got in the way of the overall church mission. I was trying to say youth ministry needs to be number one at all times, and was willing to put other ministries kind of on the other side of that.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, completely understand why that wasn't always the right, you know, argument to make. But I'm a lover of this next generation, man, and I am an advocate for them. And even if it gets me into situations where I have to try to justify why I believe a certain way, I want to strengthen and empower this next generation. And so I realized that being a professional Christian, as I like to call it, just really wasn't where God had me for the long term. I learned a lot as a youth pastor, and I enjoyed every minute of it. But I think the thing that hit me the most was really something that CHAP said in class, where he was talking through the idea that we get students once a week in youth ministry, and they come in and they're going to put on that mask or that facade of who they think we want them to be.
Right.
But then they're going to leave us and they're going to go back to doing what they really want to do. And I started really thinking and praying on that and going, man, if I really want to make a difference, is this where I'm going to make the most impact? Is one day a week where they're coming in thinking this is how I want them to act. And I kind of got, you know, convicted in that way. And I said, man, if I really want to advocate for these students and I really want to understand what they're dealing with and try to, you know, be a support for them, then I need to get into the ground level. Like I need to get boots on the ground and be in their environment, seeing it day in and day out. And that's kind of what led me to teaching is,
wow,
man, I get them now 5 days a week. And we talk through some really heart-wrenching stuff in my class because I'm an English teacher. And so I intentionally choose books that make them really question why they hold the beliefs they hold, mm-hmm. without passing along any agenda on them. But we wrestle with, man, what's it mean to be human in this world?
Right.
And how do we be better humans in this world together? How do we treat humans better in this world? Like, we get into some deep stuff and I get to see those lights click and I get to see these kids make really intelligent decisions and start to connect these dots and leave my room as someone who is absolutely going to go out there and change the world for the better. And so I don't regret that decision one bit. I love my job. I literally can't believe I get paid to do my job because like I would do it for free if I didn't have to pay bills, you know, it's one of those things. But yeah, you know, it was a long, interesting road that God took me on for me to find my way into the classroom. But at the end of the day, I'm finally in a place where I get to advocate 100% of the time for my students. And I don't have to worry about stepping over somebody in order to make that, you know, that happen.
Right. And so how many periods are you teaching?
I teach 6 periods a day currently. So I get 1 prep period. I'm technically on campus 0 through 6. And then I'm in 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. This is my prep.
And how many students there are in each class?
So my English classes right now, I'm averaging 34 students, and I've got 5 English classes. And then in my speech and debate class, I've got 40 students.
So that's a lot of lives that you're touching.
There are a lot of young minds in this room that I get the opportunity to work with.
And so do the students get to stay in your class? Is it 2 semesters? Or is it, yes. Is it just 1 semester and then they have to change it up?
No, they are stuck with me until June.
For the whole year.
For the whole year, they get to deal with the chaos that is my brain and all of the fun that happens with that.
Oh, man. So, I mean, you are definitely creating some strong individuals, like mentally being able to challenge them. And I mean, eventually that's just going to get to the point where not only are you challenging them, but they're going to start challenging themselves. And then they're going to start challenging one another. But they're going to do it like in a diplomatic way, though, right?
Well, the goal is I start every year out with some basic expectations. And I don't think it's fair for us to just mandate expectations on them. So I actually start out every year with, here's what I want you to hold me accountable to. Here's what I want you to expect from me. Wow. And I give them a list of what they should hold me accountable to. So if at any point in time I'm not holding my end of the bargain, they have free rein to call me on that and say, Griggs, what's going on here? Uh-huh. Like, this is what you said, and that's not lining up with what you're doing. So I really work to establish that mutual understanding of respect inside the classroom. And then I tell them from day one that there are going to be things that you don't agree with that are said inside of this room, but this room is a safe space. Mm-hmm. It's a nothing off limits zone. You do not have to agree with what somebody else says, but there's a difference between disagreeing in a healthy way and disagreeing in a not so healthy way. And so I will always give examples of that, and I'll tell them, you know, so let's say Bobby says something that I don't agree with. I can say, hey, Bobby, I really appreciate your perspective. I don't fully see it that way. Here's how I see it.
Right.
And then that's a healthy way for us to still have a productive conversation and offer different insights. But if I say, Bobby, you're an idiot for believing that, and here's why, well, now we're not so respectful anymore. I probably don't want to address it that way.
Right.
And so, like, on its simplistic level, they start out with that and they laugh about it and everything. But I mean, we dive into some really intense subjects in this class because sophomore year, we're tackling books like To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at everything from the history of the Jim Crow laws and how the life in the South was during that time and how and why the trial itself actually takes place and why the trial ends the way that it ends. And we look at All Quiet on the Western Front, which is a German author who actually went and survived World War One in the trenches, and then basically writes about life in the trenches through a fictional piece of work that dives us straight into, here's the reality of war, and we have to come face to face with that. So we tackle some really difficult things in the class. And at the end of the day, my job as a teacher is not to tell them what they need to believe. My job as a teacher is to help them understand why they hold the beliefs they hold.
Right.
And so we work on taking these really hard concepts and using evidence within these things to justify it. And as long as they can justify it, I tell them there's no wrong answer.
Yeah.
But you better be able to tell me why you believe that. If you can't, I'm going to push back. Even if I believe with you, I'm going to push back.
So you'll push back.
So they are, they will be able to critically think by the time they leave my class.
That's awesome.
Time.
So through this process and the way you teach, do you see a lot of the kids actually starting to form like their own identity instead of following somebody else?
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the things that I do a lot in my class is I start out with what we call quick writes. And so I will put up a topic or an idea on the board, and I give them 10, 15 minutes to just put thoughts on paper. And then we discuss it. And my favorite is, because I am the speech and debate coach for a reason, I love to ask questions and I love to get them to really understand what they're saying. So my favorite is to just question them on, so is this what you're saying? Is this what you actually mean? Well, what about this? And what about that? And they start to second guess and go, oh, I never thought about that. That's all right. Let's think about it right now.
Yeah.
And so in that process of lovingly pushing them to take a deeper look at what they're actually saying, they are starting to really formulate, okay, I never thought about that. Let me think about it. Here's where I stand now as a result of that process of thinking through that. And here's the reason why I now have this belief, or the reason why I still hold the belief I held, but I have more context to understand it now. So it is so cool to see them really dive into the questions that I'm asking them and not shut down, because a lot of times when we ask students for more, they'll shut down on us. So it's taken a few years to really kind of formulate my art. I call my teaching my art style, my practice. It's taken me a few years to really perfect that, to encourage them in a positive way where they don't shut down that thought, but they process it in a healthy way where they realize Griggs is just trying to help me understand more.
Right.
It's not a negative thing. It's actually a positive.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the good things about what you just said, as far as, you know, teaching being your art, right? And continuously learning, because if you're passionate about something, you're going to continue to learn. You're going to continue to find better ways to teach and inspire and push people. Otherwise, if it was just one of those, I'm tired, I'm just doing this to get paid, you're not gonna put hardly any effort into it whatsoever. You just gonna do what you need to do to get by. And hey, the kids are kids. They're gonna do what they want to do anyway. That's not the mindset that you have at all.
Yes, not at all. Not at all. I love my job and I will do whatever I can for my students to help them find their voice and discover their beliefs, because every one of them has so much to offer our world right now.
Right.
And so often our world just wants to hold them back and wash them down. And for me, I learn from my students every day. Every day I'm in the classroom, I learn something new because of what they bring to the table, the way they see the world. Just because they have a younger mind than I do doesn't mean that their thoughts and their ideas are any less relevant to mine.
Right, absolutely.
So I take every day as a learning opportunity, and I guarantee by the end of the year, I learn more from my students than they do from me, and I'm blessed for that.
Absolutely, huh? Oh my gosh. So have you ever come across like any times where you just kind of felt like, man, I'm not sure if I made the right decision, you know, working with this age group or certain challenges, but then you know, just kind of bit the bullet and be like, you know what, I'm going to go for it anyway?
I don't think I've ever questioned the age group I work with, mainly because elementary school kids terrify me. The idea of being in a room with elementary school kids is like my worst nightmare come true. I think I would walk in and they would see like all my tattoos and they would do one of they would either start crying or they would grab a crayon and start trying to add to it. And then I would start crying either way. So elementary school kids and me, we're not going to vibe very well. Right. Middle school kids, man, I love them. I value them, but they think they're really cool. Yeah. And I love to have fun with my kids. And we joke back and forth all the time. Like, they know it's fair game to have fun with me, but I'm going to throw it right back. Like, we're going to joke and we're going to have fun. And if they're going to throw, you know, some kind of shade at me, I'm going to throw it right back. And it's a really fun environment to be in because they feel safe enough to do that.
Yeah.
Middle school, I know I would be in trouble all the time because they would throw it at me and I would throw it back and then they'd be mad that I threw it back. And then I'd wind up in front of my boss going, they started it. I finished it. Like, right. What do you want me to do right now? My high schoolers don't do that. They love, like, I give them an opportunity every week during football season because I'm a diehard 49ers fan. Yep. So I got my 49ers lanyard back here. And I tell them, hey, if my football team's playing your football team, let's go. Like, winner wears the other team's jersey. So I have my Nick Bosa jersey here. One of my sisters had to rep that thing loud and proud because they were a Seattle fan. Like, we have fun with it. Like, I try to make it a fun environment. But middle school, yeah. No, I'd probably be fired because I'm not afraid to have fun with them. So as far as questioning the age group that I'm working with, I don't think I have. I was a little nervous at first to get the grade level that I got in high school, but within the first week of working with those students, and I think, you know, COVID probably had a lot to do with that too.
Yeah.
It is an educational field. We have really had to kind of pivot and adjust from what we used to know as normal to what we currently know as normal. And we have to just honestly understand that what used to be normal is no longer normal.
Right.
And we can't compare the new normal to the old normal. We just have to accept that this is the new normal.
Exactly.
And we have to adjust. Like, this is the reality of education right now. But, you know, I think with the current age group that I get to work with, I went in with other people's understanding of that age group and it made me nervous. Mm-hmm. But when I actually got in the room with the students, I realized this is no different from anything I've really ever done. And, you know, I pray over every desk in my classroom before the start of the school year. And I just, you know, every day I come into work, I have the opportunity, and I really do view it as an opportunity. I have the opportunity to help young minds process really difficult things. And I literally teach over 200 students a day. So over 200 students enter these four walls in my classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of those 200 students, they are God's children. Like, their story that they're currently writing with their life, their story of what they're going to become, that all belongs to God.
Right.
And so the fact that these students are in my room, I really do hold that as a sacred thing because for whatever reason, their name fell on my roster.
Mm-hmm.
All the teachers they could have had, these are the students that God has me working with this year. And so I try not to allow anything negative to enter my mind. And is it hard? Yes. Are there days I leave frustrated? Yes. I don't think I know a teacher out there that's had a perfect experience every single day of the week, but every day is a new day and every day is a fresh start. And these kids deserve it from us. Like, they're going to have rough days. You know, I don't know 15, 16 year old that doesn't have a rough day. But I wouldn't trade working with this age group for anything because, man, to have the opportunity to help 15 and 16 year olds really process these things is a blessing.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's awesome, though. You have a huge responsibility and you're like, oh, I got this. Now, is there a difference, do you think, when it comes to the students in the classrooms to actually coaching, when you're coaching, coaching that rock?
Yes. You know, it's it's a different mentality. You know, inside of the classroom, you are trying to help them understand and whatever that may require of you. So for different students, they're going to need different things from me in order to understand the concepts.
Mm-hmm.
In basketball, we have a clear objective, right? Like, we're getting ready for this game. And so everybody's got to play their role. And so part of my job as one of our coaches is helping convey what that role is and working with, you know, the other coaches and breaking down film and trying to figure out where the weaknesses are on that other team so we can adjust for that. And honestly, watching the film of our own team, because we'll record different practices and stuff, or we'll see stuff and immediately stop it. And we have, you know, when practice is going on, I have to kind of, I tell them, I'm taking off my, hey, you know, Griggs hat, and I'm putting on that coach hat, and I'm going to love them. When they're off the court, we're going to have a lot of fun. I still mess with my players as much as I mess with the ones in the classroom. Like, we have a relationship. And I'll give them little challenges and stuff. Like, hey, if you can hit this, you know, step back, pull back, jumper real quick, I got Chick-fil-A for you tomorrow. Like, I'll give them little things like that to have fun with them. But at the end of the day, as a coach, I still demand my respect. I earn it from them, but I demand that respect from them too, because they have to understand that when I'm calling them out on something, I'm calling it out because I see it needs to be fixed or adjusted so we can all find success in that.
Yeah.
And in the classroom, it's similar, but I can do it with a little more grace than I can on the basketball court. And so it's, you know, it is, though, it's similar to the classroom in the sense that each one of my players needs something different. They're going to respond in different ways. So me yelling at some of my girls isn't going to be effective. They're going to shut down. Me encouraging some of my girls maybe is the way I need to go. Others of them, they respond better with that tough love from the coach. They don't care if you're pointing out everything they do right. They're asking you, what am I doing wrong? How do I get better? So you kind of, you know, it's more of an intimate relationship, I would say, between a player and a coach, because you have to spend a lot of time getting to know your players so you know how to best help and support them.
Right.
And it's also really difficult because in the classroom, at the end of the day, they're all working for the goal of passing the class. On the basketball court, we're all working to win, but I can only play five. And so, you know, we have a team of 12. And so I'm very thankful that I'm not the head varsity coach that has to make those decisions. But you fall in love with every one of these kids and you really wish that they could be out there. But you only get to play five, and we have to sometimes make really difficult decisions that do come at the expense of other players. And so that is something that is very hard as a coach, because we want every player to succeed and we want every player to have that opportunity and to get out there, because nobody goes to play a sport and is like, I'm going to be totally fine with sitting the bench every year in every game. Like, why would you put yourself through that? You know? And so as the coach, to have to be the one that helps make those decisions, that's a very, very tough job. And it's hard to keep players motivated. So finding that balance, that's kind of the difference, I would say. We're in the classroom, they're going to see success if they work hard.
Right.
Basketball's not always like that.
Right.
They can work really hard, but they still might not get that spot on the court. So it's kind of weighing those different options.
And this... You could just totally tell, like, who's gifted and who isn't. And I think that's the same thing applies in life too, right? So you might have those people who are really gifted in a certain area, and they might try to do something that really doesn't align with their gifts or talents. And then they keep on pushing, like, man, I'm still working hard. I'm working hard. I'm trying to bust my butt, but for some reason it's not clicking. Well, maybe that wasn't for you.
Yes. Right? Yes. Absolutely the way. Like, coach, I'm 4'11", but I can really be a center. Like, sweetheart, you are 4'11". We are never going to be a center. You might be a center for like a rec team in elementary school. That's about as far as we're going to get in a center spot. Yeah, it absolutely is. Trying to help them find what skills, what gifts they have, even inside the classroom. Like, this is the thing that I love the most is when I hear, man, I have to go to college. Fool, you hate school. Why are you going to go and pay for four more years of this that you hate doing?
Right.
Like, I'm good to get you to turn in an assignment that we've been working on all day in class. why are you trying to go to college for? They're like, well, that's what I've been told I need to do. I mean, it's an option, but if you hate this, like, why are you going to go waste your money? Let's look, like, what do you like to do? Oh, I like to do this. You don't need to go to college to do that. Yeah. We got all these other things that we can do. So it is so funny to see, like, this cookie cutter mold that we try to put on these kids and say, this is what you have to do. No, if you don't like it, stop trying to make it work. The shoe's never going to fit, Cinderella. Like, come on.
Do you think being at a seminary prepared you for this? For this journey that you're on now?
I do believe that a lot of what I learned in seminary did. I believe that, in all honesty, though, I think the work of Steve Argue and Chad Clark were probably the two most influential people to help me see and understand you through the lens that I currently do.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have had the same approach that I currently have if I hadn't learned from them,
right,
in the context that I learned from them. The other side of it is, though, that I've continued my work and I am in my final year of my PhD program. And so a lot of my dissertation and my focus is actually on the mental health of high school athletes, specifically looking at performance psychology and how psychological injuries will impact high school athletes.
Wow.
So a lot of my research has helped to shape how I approach not only coaching, but also my classroom, because at the end of the day, teaching is a form of coaching. It's just different. The goal's different, but we're still coaching. We're still motivating. We're still trying to engage these students and help them make these connections. And the goal is just different. Instead of winning the game, the goal is, let's get you through to the next grade. Like, you know, let's understand this material in a way that maybe you haven't understood it before. Or if nothing else, let's get you engaged and give you a different perspective on what this subject could be, because you've hated it until now. I would hate you to have to hate something for an hour every day. Like, let's try to be fun and engaging at least.
Exactly.
So,
I know. Yeah,
all of that together is like, without that, I don't know where I would be.
Wow. I know it's made a huge impact on me. Just when you just, when I just kind of go back and go through some of the books also, I'm like, man, this has really made an impact. Or because, you know, you start going through some of the books that we read in school, whether it's an ebook or if it's actual hard copy, and you start writing in the margins, or you just start writing some notes, you'd be like, man, this is quite a revelation I had just reading this little paragraph right here. So,
yes. And to look back on it now too and see, man, that never stuck out to me before, but now that's hitting me upside the head. Like, you need to pay attention to me right here.
Right now. So I know, like, you know, just being a teacher, being a coach, it's all about communication and connecting with people. And if you don't do it, I mean, you're just not going to have that respect. So what are some of the ways that you've actually, I guess, connected, or methods that you use, you know, in connecting with your students and your players?
Yeah, I think the number one thing that I've been able to do with my students and my team is I help them to realize that I care about them as an overall person. I don't just care about them as the student in my classroom, and I don't just care about them as the player on our team. I care about them in their entirety, right? Their wholeness. Right. And the reality is, God created us to be people in community, and He created us to be known and to be seen. And I really do believe that there is a part of our soul that needs that. It needs that love. It needs that support. It needs that recognition to feel like it has value and purpose in the world, instead of being lonely and isolated. And when we look at the science behind the brain's development, and we look at the different parts of the brain and when they're formulated, the age group that I work with in high school is going through that process where their brain is literally trying to discover who they are and why they are who they are. And so it's so important when dealing with students to let them know that you are not another person that is only concerned about this part in their life. because they're going to try to please you in every element if you're only concerned here. And that may end up doing a lot of damage to them in the long run.
Yeah.
If we can be concerned about them as people first and come alongside of them, then they'll do anything for you because they know that you care more about them than you do their performance in the game, than you do their performance on a task in class. They know that you're going to recognize when something's going wrong. Like if you have a student that's going through a rough day and you're not able to identify that that student's a little bit off, I would question, do you really know your students?
Right.
Like if I have a player on my team that's off and I don't recognize that, then I have to question, how did I miss that? And not right. every student can show it in a very clear way, but some do. And if we miss it, then I have to ask myself, how did I miss that?
Right.
They were acting different. Like, what was going on in my head that prevented me from seeing that? So, you know, for me, the number one thing that I really lean into, whether it's in my classroom or it's on the court, is yes, you are in my class or you are on our basketball team, but my care for you does not end when that bell rings or when that game's over. Like, I am here and I am for you and I am on your team through everything in life. And I'm going to partner with you in this journey. And I'm going to be there every step of the way that you want me to be there.
Yeah.
Because your life is what's important to me. It goes back to that quote from Wooden, you know, hey, yeah, we can maybe win a game, but man, if I can look back and I can have a player come back and tell me, coach, you changed my life, I would take every loss for every other game. And in every game I coach for the rest of history, if that meant that I could change one player's life,
yeah.
Because that's the end goal.